Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey.
Good afternoon.
I did it right this time.
Yes.
We're still in your office here. This is day two of our long national nightmare. We're holding knives.
We have knives against each other.
I've handed out some party favors, and they're both knives designed by my friend Bill Harsey.
I brought a knife to a sword fight, it looks like.
It does. So, yeah, this is my Kill Bill sword. We'll go over this in great detail.
Yeah, the Hattori
Hanzo. So this is a civilian model of the Yarbrough, which is the knife that is what you get when you become a Green Beret, when you graduate from the Special Forces. And this is just a recent knife of Bill's. This is actually hand ground by Bill in his workshop. And when I found out you could buy such a thing, he sent me a link. I was like, oh my God, I must get. So I did.
The Green Beret one is much more impressive.
This is made as a kind of an ultimate survival knife. Right. This is sort of like a keep around your house and take care of business knife.
When you say take care of business, I mean, do you mean like chopping onions or stabbing intruders?
No, somewhere in between.
Okay.
This
looks like it's flint napped.
Here is something that Bill sent to me and gave to me. This is a napped blade. That's K-N-A-P-P-E-T. Mm-hmm. ED.
As the caveman did,
except this is a piece of plate glass, and Mr. Harsey's teaching himself napping, and this is one of his blades. It's one of my favorite possessions.
That's a hard skill to learn. It involves lots of bloody knuckles, I would
totally
think.
Totally.
The caveman can do it.
Yeah. You say that, but the caveman had a lot more time.
Right, yeah. They've got more time than I do.
Yeah, I mean, your napping ability is directly related to your survival ability.
I got the other type of napping ability.
Yes, yeah. I'm really good at the other kind of napping. I'm a
master napper.
Master napper.
I have a ribbon. This is pro napper.
Number one napper. I can fall asleep anywhere, anytime.
So that's, Alan Shepard had that skill. That was an Alan Shepard skill.
Alan Shepard, the astronaut.
Yeah, he apparently was laying in Mercury. He was one, right? Yeah. He was the first Mercury. They didn't number him that way, but he was the first. And he was laying in the, and I'm probably telling the entirely wrong astronaut. It may have been Gus Grissom or one of the other guys, but one of the Mercury astronauts was actually in the cockpit or the capsule asleep during a countdown hold.
Intentionally?
Legend.
I fell asleep.
No, they didn't let any narcoleptic astronauts go.
When we did skydiving for Mythbusters way back in season one, I fell asleep in the plane on the way up.
Wow. That's a high level. Had you been skydiving before?
No, I've never done it before.
So you're getting ready to jump out of a plane for the first time.
But you're not afraid that when you wake up, you're not disoriented?
No, I'm always...
Sharp?
I'm not immediately sharp, but I just love napping. I love reading a book in the afternoon, and I feel kind of tired and put the book down on my chest and fall asleep.
I heard that's a thing that you used to be able to do.
No, that I used to be able to do.
Yes. Wait, where am I?
You also choose not to do that when you fly because you want to be productive when you fly.
No, actually, I go back and forth. I let it happen if it's going to happen. I don't resist sleeping in order to be productive. Mm. And planes have such a somnambulic effect on me that I regularly sleep through the takeoff.
I do that too.
I take a window seat specifically for that reason.
Great.
When I fly to LA, I often wake up after we land. So the entire process has been invisible to me.
Because the most boring part of a flight is when you're in the seat and everyone else is boarding. And the plane isn't doing anything.
Yeah, I fall right. Here's the thing is, I don't fall asleep then. It's the moment they close the door and the cabin pressurizes, my body's like, it's time to go to sleep now. And I go right to sleep.
See, I can never do that. My head always goes from side to side and thump, thump, thump and wakes me up immediately.
And luckily this year losing 20 pounds has significantly decreased my snoring to almost nil now. So it's, I used to be, when I was 195, I'd be on a plane and I'd be going... that kind of thing, and I'd turn and people would be like, it wasn't that bad.
That's the kind
of
thing
it was really bad.
Yeah, you don't want to see that on YouTube.
No.
Honestly, at this point, I don't remember what we said we were going to talk
about.
We're going to talk about Star Wars.
No, we haven't talked about Star Wars enough.
I heard there was this movie called Star Wars.
at my father's memorial in 1999, I met a relative I hadn't seen in a long time, and I was just recently hired at that point on Star Wars Episode One. And so my relative said, so you're working on this film called Star Wars? And I said, yes. And he said, I heard you're working on Star Wars. And I said, yes. Super excited. And he goes, now, is it a film? And I thought, you're the one. You're the one that somehow this has escaped. You're like the Pacific Islanders worshiping planes as gods. Somehow Star Wars is...
The Russian...
Tell me about this, yeah. These Star Wars of yours.
These wars of stars.
Wow.
Well, so we talked about Star Wars on the podcast a few weeks ago. We talked about Disney purchasing Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
But then the big thing that happened now is that J.J. Abrams of Lost, of Alias. Felicity, of Alias, of...
Didn't he do a Mission Star Impossible
Trek
movie?
Reboot?
What? He did a ton of TV shows that also never went anywhere.
Yeah.
With Bad Robot Productions.
Bad Robot Productions.
Yeah. The Star Trek reboot, which I went into that Star Trek reboot really, really skeptical, and I absolutely love it.
I saw it twice in the theater, something I almost never, ever do.
It's a great, great movie.
He has spawned a group of brilliant geniuses like Damon Lindelof. Mm-hmm. I think of him as the action movie Judd Apatow, right? of television
yeah.
and
yeah.
movies.
He has a series of people that aren't man children. They're just yeah.
And Abrams has been confirmed that he's going to direct Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah,
which when we did the podcast last, we gave our own predictions and our own hopes for who would direct the movie, and we tossed out all the usual names, but we never thought it could be J.J. Abrams.
Because he was already committed to something with star in the title.
Yes. What's very interesting is that I think that there might be end up being some crossovers between the Star Trek universe and the Star Wars universe.
What do you... Wait, no.
Zachary Quinto?
No. I don't mean in terms of the narrative. I just mean in terms of hired performers. I'll wager that some of the people that he has always gone to, like actors like Greg Grunberg, every one of his projects, is going to make an appearance in the Star Wars universe.
Think about the lens flare you could get on two suns at Tatooine.
Or two lightsabers hitting each other.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I
what about two double lightsabers?
Sorry,
I apologize.
For me, the thing that is really exciting about this is that Abrams is a brilliant storyteller. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has modeled himself since 14 on Spielberg and Lucas and grown up inculcated with that. I think, 8mm is an incredible sort of doctoral thesis on Spielbergian filmmaking, and I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I can't wait to see...
Super 8.
Super 8.
8mm
is
the
borderline porn film,
the
Nick Cage
film. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Another.
Sorry, Super 8.
It's like, wow. I didn't know J.J. Abrams did 8mm.
He made a movie about the love of filmmaking.
Yes. Yeah.
And you could tell he had fun making that.
Oh, film. Yeah. I mean, in a way, it felt like having grown up on Spielberg's films like he did. I think he's a couple years older than me, but having grown up on the same movies, it felt almost like if you took a bubblegum card set of Spielbergian tropes and put them together, even down to kids riding a bicycle to rescue somebody. I mean, all of those things were in there, and it felt so familiar and so great as a viewer.
Well, the thing for me was, what if the kids from E.T. were 5 years older? Right. I mean, it was those kids. Right. It could have been the same kid. It was wonderful.
I
mean,
and, it's funny because I ended up, I remember when Super 8 came out, there was a lot of complaints that it was derivative and that they felt like it was... Yeah, a derivative was the primary thing.
Yeah.
And I kept pointing out, and I don't think anyone can really deny, it's still also, at the same time as being, I think, a terrific story and really well written and well directed, the directing of the kids, some of the best performances I've ever seen from kids are in that movie. Again, that doesn't necessarily translate to Star Wars, because hopefully in these new Star Wars movies, there aren't any little children. Oh.
Yeah, I can't defend that. I was going to say I got to do the contrarian thing. But...
So you like Boba Fett.
So we should tell you now that you need to go do a Google search for Patton Oswalt time machine or something like I would kill George Lucas with a shovel.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt has a brilliant routine about meeting George Lucas somewhere in the 90s and stopping him from making episodes 1, 2, and 3.
You know, the thing about episodes 1, 2, and 3, though, is that if you show kids, I mean, your kids are...
Yeah,
probably well trained, but
they're
the right age to grow up on episodes 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
I have friends whose kids are the same age as or a little bit younger than your kids. And and like if you ask them which one they like better, it's the third one. They like episode 3.
Yeah. So yes, it's true. This is true what you say.
I mean, I think that you have to be in the right place at the right time to appreciate Star Wars, I think you have to be the right age for it.
And you know what? There'll be a whole generation of kids that just know the new trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so now, and here's this about the new trilogy, and here's where I think, to me, it gets exciting. And I'm just speculating here. But I imagine that
Lindelof penned episode 7 script.
No. Abrams could not pass up an opportunity to work with the actors that helped define his childhood. And I think he's going to find a place for Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, and Mark Hamill in episode 7.
I think they have to.
They absolutely have to. And I want to see them. I want Han Solo back in a movie. I want that movie.
I want crotchety old Han Solo.
Absolutely. Yeah. Millennium Falcon. I really feel like I know this in my bones that Abrams is working now in a script where the only axiom is Han Solo and the Millennium Falcon have to be in this fucking thing.
It's a one-act play set in the Millennium Falcon.
Right, and you've got, you know... Yeah,
that's the Kevin Smith version.
Oh, right, my bad. The camera never moves.
Midi-chloridians?
What? No. I'm sorry, that's not a word I know.
No. We know that J.J. Abrams has a distinctive visual style, and we can identify with a lot of different elements. Do you feel like, because he has a bag of tricks like every filmmaker does, and Spielberg has a big bag of tricks because he'll make two movies that look completely different, have different tones. But J.J. Abrams movies are all kind of genre films so far. Mm-hmm. You know, Mission Impossible, Star Trek.
He's not made that many films.
Super 8, right? Do you feel like, I feel like he put a lot of himself into Star Trek, you know, in terms of pulling his sci-fi bag of tricks. Star Wars has a very distinctive look and distinctive tone. Will he introduce his filmmaking style?
I think he certainly will, but remember that this is a Lucasfilm property. So
a Disney property.
Disney property, but through Lucasfilm. So what he's going to have to tap into is all of the amazing artisans at Lucasfilm who have all worked on these movies over just 3 decades.
30 years.
Sometimes almost 4 decades by the time episode 7 comes out.
Yeah.
And these are people really deeply inculcated with that look and the feel of that universe. And I think of course he's going to go for the things that he knows, but if he's also going to seek to show us something new and a facet of it that is new.
Well, the thing that he did with the Trek movie, and we're going to spoil the Trek movie if you haven't seen it, because
the first
remake, not Into Darkness, which we haven't seen yet. I mean, although if you want to bring it by, we're available. the thing that
we still wouldn't spoil it.
No, we still wouldn't spoil it. No. Exactly. He
May 17th.
I know what I'm doing on May 17th.
Actually, May 15th now, if you want to watch an IMAX.
Perfect. It's my birthday. Hey, I know what I want for my birthday now, guys. The thing that he did was he took the essence of Trek and the stuff that I loved about Trek, the relationship between Kirk and Spock and McCoy, the kind of clean, sterile future, the future that I want to believe in, not the dirty future that we ended up getting. And he kept the essence of that stuff and told a really core Trek story, and then retconned the entire universe, retconned the whole history of the good and the bad, got rid of it all.
Yep.
And paid homage to the old while making something that's completely new.
Yeah.
Which I mean, that is such a hard thing to do, and it's, it happens so infrequently with reboots and remakes.
Great thing with the Orsi and
the other
script.
The other thing that he did that he's done and that I think defines him as a creative is casting is almost always completely spot on.
I mean, Chris Pine, who knew that Chris Pine could do that?
Chris Pine owns Kirk.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is like Kirk was always
without being parody.
Being parody and without changing what you think of Shatner's great Kirk.
Yeah.
I mean, because Shatner is phenomenal as Kirk.
It would have been hard, but I mean, that could have been parody so
Spock
easily.
And Scotty, the actor that plays Scotty.
Simon Pegg.
Bones.
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban.
Carl Urban is just like one of these
and he is
undersung geniuses.
And not someone who you would in a million years cast in that role.
Yeah.
What else have you done before that?
Riders of Rohan.
He was one of the guys
from Lord of the Rings.
Yep. Wow. He was the guy with the long hair?
Yes. And he was the other hitman in the second Bourne film. The Russian hitman in the second Bourne
movie.
Wow. Oh, I know. When you look at Carl Urban's IMDb, you're like, I cannot believe that's all the same.
And you saw Dredd, right? Or have you not seen Dredd?
I have not seen Dredd.
Oh, you should see Dredd. He's okay. really good in Dredd. So, I mean, Norm doesn't like
Carl Urban is one of these like rare gems. Like, I think James Purefoy is another one who's been in Spartacus or Rome.
And he was
he played Blackpants Harry in Knight's Tale, which is when I first became aware of him. But he's like one of these great actors that you don't know about, but directors do, and they put him in key roles to do great stuff.
A Knight's Tale, the Heath Ledger music video. That's a fantastic movie. I absolutely love it. Yeah.
Such a great movie.
Yeah.
So Abrams is going to cast the spit out of that. And I'm really excited about that.
I'm really excited about his collaborators that he works with now getting their hands on this
source material.
We're going to get some more Chewbacca.
But also like Michael Giacchino, who does all his music for all the Abrams stuff.
Yeah.
When he'll get to play with John Williams' score and introduce his own themes.
Maybe. I wonder if they'll insist that he use John Williams since John Williams scored all the others.
It's
a good question.
I think these are the kind of things that interest
But you know, at the same time, I read this long article about Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah, in the Hollywood Reporter.
That beautiful article, flying to L.A. and talking to Abrams for a few hours and wondering what happens in that room, right?
And it boils down to, you must make this movie.
Right. And then you imagine that turn where he realizes that this is the project he wants to do. And I have to imagine that it's about autonomy. It's really about autonomy. Like, you can make this movie the way you want to make this movie because we think you will do it justice. And you will have this incredible, rich treasure trove of artisans to work on it who are all chomping at the bit.
Yeah.
To work on it. I mean, it's a perfect storm. I'm really excited about this.
And when you get a chance, I mean, obviously, it's a chance that's not like anything we've ever had. But when you have when you're presented with that kind of a choice, whether it's for your career, your personal life, whatever, like there's a branch at that point in your life, and it goes one of two ways, right? And there's an alternate universe version of you that went the other way, and that has a whole different set of consequences. But you have to wonder. Like, I don't see how you can pass that up if you're J.J.
Abrams. That's the thing that worries me, is it sounds like maybe, you know, he met with the screenwriters, they all brainstormed, and he loved the story, but he seems like partially he chose to do this because he knew that it's an opportunity, once in a lifetime, once in a generation. You know, he wanted to take this.
Yeah, but I've never met him, and I don't know him on any kind of personal level, but I would imagine that Abrams is someone who has built his career, as he knows, on having a large amount of control over his projects and putting his stamp on them. And a stamp is the thing that has allowed his career to progress to where it is, and that he wouldn't accept a project where that was compromised, even if it's a chance of a lifetime.
Right? Yeah. And that's the hard thing to do.
And I would imagine.
The story when he chose to do Star Trek was that originally it was just this production company. He read the script, and then he said to his wife, I can't not make this movie. Having read the script, this is a movie I would feel like I don't want anyone else making.
Yeah,
right.
So I feel like hopefully it's something similar with this.
Yeah, I have to imagine that that's the case. Obviously, every last bit of this is speculation, but I'm a very excited Star Wars fan.
2015.
Oh, it's such a long time from now.
It's going to be quite a summer.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you. I'm... Nothing after the last run of movies. I was there at midnight on opening night for episode one, and I walked out thinking, you know, the pod racing scene was okay.
Yeah,
it was pretty. Yeah,
yeah.
I just hope.
Couldn't be any worse.
Oh, yeah, it could be.
Here's the thing, maybe that's
George Lucas's greatest contribution.
He
reset the bar.
Okay. What do you do with Mark Hamill? I love Mark Hamill. He's a great voice actor.
Just compliment him on his Joker, on his seminal and vital Joker.
He is the
Batman
best Joker
ever. Well, yeah.
Outside of, you know, the Departed.
For the medium, sure.
I mean, I hope they just give him a CGI Luke and, you know, put him in a holocron or something, call it a day.
I think we'll be well satisfied.
How do you solve the Mark Hamill problem, Adam?
I
think the Carrie Fisher problem might be a big
The Carrie Fisher, fair enough. You make her a nun and you put her in an old station wagon, you drive down the road.
I love Carrie Fisher so much.
Oh, okay. And on that note. We'll see you guys next week with another episode. Oh, questions to podcast@tester.com. Yes. Subject line, questions for Adam, or else I don't get them filtered into the right slot, and we will never see them. Also, reviews, feedback, ratings, likes on YouTube. Norm is holding a knife and is going to stab someone if we don't get enough reviews. That is a really sharp knife, Norman Chan. We love getting feedback, positive or negative. So please leave feedback on iTunes, YouTube, wherever you might find us, or in the comments below. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye, guys. That note.